What if I told you that the most important part of a massive new skyscraper, isn't the steel or the concrete or even the engineering?
That is quite the claim to start with.
Right. But what if the most crucial element is actually this highly specific, like totally invisible financial contract? A contract that allowed the machines that built the skyscraper to even exist in the first place.
It really is the ultimate hidden layer of our physical world. I mean, we see the finished skyline, but we are completely blind to the financial architecture that dictates what can and cannot actually be built.
Exactly. And normally, that invisible architecture is kept securely locked away in, corporate boardrooms and incredibly dense financial white
Oh,
papers.
yeah, documents most people never want to read.
Totally. It is a world you almost never get a window into. But today, we are throwing that window wide open. Our mission for this deep dive into our sources is to decode exactly how a single, highly strategic agreement is bridging the massive gap between heavy industrial manufacturing and innovative modern finance.
Which is a massive gap, by the way.
It's huge. And we are looking at a crucial excerpt from a text titled Pioneering CNC Manufacturing Through Asset-Backed Industrial Investment. And this details a major announcement that just dropped at Cash Expo 2026.
It is a remarkable document. And as we go through this, I want you listening to keep one core theme in mind. This is not about, abstract numbers moving around on a Bloomberg
Right,
terminal.
no digital illusions here.
Exactly. This is about tangible, productive assets being built from the ground up and the incredibly complex mechanisms required to fund them.
And our goal today is to help you understand exactly how these modern manufacturing ecosystems are funded and really why this massive global shift toward what the sources call real economy assets matters directly to you and your own understanding of global markets.
Okay, let's unpack this. In one corner, representing the innovative finance side, we have an entity called Usuljamaa.
And in the other corner, representing the heavy manufacturing side, we have a company called Abad Jadida, which translates to new dimensions. And they've signed a memorandum of understanding, an OMU, to explore financing new production lines across the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
That is the essential baseline here. We have an established financial platform specializing in asset-backed investment structuring, and they're joining forces with an industrial operator eager to scale.
Right.
But to truly grasp the weight of this MOU, we cannot just look at the money. I mean, visualize blueprints and financial charts coming together. We have to look at what that money is fundamentally meant to build and why it is so difficult to finance.
Right. Before we can understand the financial structuring, we need to understand the hardware. So according to our source text, Abad Jadida is expanding specifically within the CNC sector. That stands for Computer Numerical Control. The text is very deliberate in its wording here. It explicitly defines CNC as a, quote, critical pillar of precision manufacturing that serves construction, engineering, and industrial production. But I want to push back on this a little bit.
Okay, let's hear it.
Well, we have had CNC machines for decades, right? They are essentially just highly advanced computer-guided drills and lathes. Why is the text treating this like it is some revolutionary technology? Isn't a CNC machine just a commodity piece of equipment at this point?
What's fascinating here is that while the underlying concept, of a computer guiding a cutting tool isn't new, the role of that tool in a modern industrial ecosystem has fundamentally shifted.
Shifted how?
Well, it is no longer just a piece of equipment on a factory floor. It is the ultimate bottleneck of physical reality.
The bottleneck. What do you mean by that?
I mean, in modern engineering, tolerances have shrunk to the microscopic level. Whether you are building components for a massive construction crane or a high-speed rail network or advanced aerospace applications.
Things where you literally cannot afford a mistake.
Exactly. You cannot build modern infrastructure with approximations. CNC manufacturing allows for exact, replicable, flawless production of complex components at a massive scale. If you do not have domestic access to that precision capability, your entire industrial sector is stalled.
Okay, let me see if I can translate that into a functional analogy for our listeners. Think of CNC as essentially the central nervous system of the physical world.
I like that.
Like your brain can send an electrical signal to your hand, but if the nervous system is damaged, the hand doesn't move. In the industrial world, a computer sends an exact, flawless digital signal, like a CAD design, to heavy cutting tools. That CNC machine is the central nervous system translating the digital thought into physical reality. So if CNC is the foundational layer for all these other heavy industries, is investing in CNC essentially creating a massive multiplier effect for the entire economy?
Precisely. And the text confirms exactly that premise. Scaling the CNC sector is described as playing a central role in advanced production ecosystems.
Right, because it touches everything.
Yes, investing here is not just about building a factory that makes one specific consumer gadget. It is about building the tools that build everything else. You are fundamentally expanding the capacity of every single domestic industry that relies on those precision parts.
Okay, so that perfectly explains the technology, but, I mean, building out a national Nerdist system sounds incredibly expensive and logistically terrifying.
Oh, absolutely.
A standard commercial bank isn't going to just hand over hundreds of millions of dollars to build experimental CNC lines. Which really makes me look at the geographic and political context of this menu.
Yeah.
The sources highlight that this is a vital piece of Saudi Arabia's broader industrial transformation strategy.
Yes. The MOU we are analyzing evaluates the feasibility of developing these new production lines with very specific, targeted outcomes.
What kind of outcomes?
The text lists them quite clearly. Strengthening domestic manufacturing capacity, increasing local content contribution, accelerating industrial localization initiatives, and enhancing competitiveness in both regional and international markets.
Wait, hold on. I need to challenge this because, well, that list of goals goes against decades of established economic theory.
You're thinking of global supply chains.
Yeah, exactly. We have spent the last 40 years proving that global outsourcing is the most cost-effective way to build things. You find the cheapest labor, you manufacture the components overseas, and you ship them back. Why on earth would Saudi Arabia try to localize heavy, complex, expensive manufacturing?
It seems counterintuitive at first glance.
Right. Isn't pushing for local content just a fast track to wildly overpriced domestic goods?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the strategy revealed in the text is actually a dual-engine approach. Relying purely on global supply chains for foundational manufacturing leaves an economy incredibly fragile.
Oh, right. Because if one link breaks, everything stops.
Exactly. We have all seen what happens when shipping lanes freeze or global tariffs shift unexpectedly. Saudi Arabia's broader industrial transformation strategy is fundamentally about building resilience and leverage simultaneously.
So it's not just about cost per unit.
No, not at all. By accelerating industrial localization initiatives at home, they directly enhance their competitiveness on the regional and international stage. They are removing the fragility.
Ah, I think I understand. It is like building an open source API for your own country.
An API? Walk me through that.
Well, in software, if you build a robust foundational API, any developer can plug into it and build an app in a weekend instead of a year. If Saudi Arabia builds the foundational CNC manufacturing base locally, any domestic engineering startup, whether they are designing agricultural drones or medical devices, they can immediately plug into that local capacity.
They don't have to wait on international shipping.
Exactly. They don't have to wait 6 months for a prototype to be shipped from a foreign supplier. They can get it milled down the street in 2 days.
That is a brilliant way to conceptualize it. You are reducing the friction for every subsequent layer of industrial innovation. When a nation increases its local content contribution, it retains the economic value of that production.
The knowledge stays there.
Yes, the technological know-how stays local, and the rapid prototyping capability stays local. Once that domestic API, as you called it, is robust enough, you are no longer just self-reliant. You naturally become a highly competitive exporter of advanced manufacturing capabilities to the rest of the world.
But, the core problem remains, right? Who pays to build the API? To localize manufacturing on such a massive scale, you need an entirely different kind of capital.
You do. It's a completely different risk profile.
Right. You cannot just fund heavy industrial facilities which are filled with precision machinery that costs millions of dollars per unit the same way you fund a scrappy software startup working out of a garage. And you certainly can't fund it the way you fund a standard office building.
And that brings us to the financial architect in this MOU, Osul Gamma.
Yes, the finance side.
The source material provides some crucial context about their broader trajectory here. They are described as a platform specializing in asset-backed investment structuring. But what is truly noteworthy is that this partnership underscores their strategy to expand beyond their traditional real estate focus.
Okay, so they're moving away from what they used to do.
Correct. They are broadening their investment scope into high-impact operational sectors.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Wait, so Osul Gamma is actively moving away from investing in the building itself and shifting to invest in the heavy, complex machinery operating inside the building.
That's what the text indicates, yes.
That completely flips the traditional real estate model on its head. How does shifting focus from a static building to an operational sector change the game?
It fundamentally changes the nature of the value being created. In traditional real estate, your asset is essentially static.
It just sits there.
Exactly. A warehouse is valued based on its square footage, its proximity to a highway, and the current local lease rates. The machinery sitting inside that warehouse is entirely the tenant's problem.
Right. The landlord just collects the rent on the concrete shell.
Exactly. But when Osul Gamma shifts its focus to what the text calls productive real economy assets, like CNC manufacturing facilities, they are engaging with dynamic cash flowing operations.
So they care about what the machine is actually doing.
Yes. The value isn't derived from the concrete shell anymore. The value is derived from the actual tangible output of the machines taking raw steel and turning it into a highly valuable aerospace component.
Okay, but if I'm listening to this, I'm probably thinking, wait a minute. A concrete warehouse might be boring, but it lasts for 50 years. Heavy machinery breaks down, parts wear out, technology becomes obsolete.
It's a very fair concern.
Why would I, as an investor, want my capital tied to a highly specific physical machine that depreciates and requires constant maintenance, rather than a diversified liquid stock portfolio or a simple piece of real estate? I mean, how does this model protect against a CNC machine just becoming a rusted liability?
That is the exact risk calculation that separates traditional finance from structured asset-backed finance. You are absolutely right that machinery depreciates. But a stock portfolio doesn't actively manufacture high-margin aerospace parts.
Fair point.
The text states that this collaboration is a practical step toward building long-term partnerships that connect industrial operators with structured capital. The key word there is structured.
Structured capital. So it's not a blank check.
Not at all. The capital isn't just thrown at the machine. The financial contract is built around the operational life cycle of that specific machine. The revenue generated by its continuous output is modeled to far outpace its depreciation, provided the operation is managed correctly.
Wow. Okay, so it is the evolution of investment from the passive to the active. You aren't just buying the land and hoping the neighborhood gentrifies. You are actively structuring opportunities around the tangible output of the economy.
Exactly. You're funding production.
By channeling capital directly into advanced manufacturing infrastructure, they're not only supporting Saudi industrial growth, but actively boosting the kingdom's overall investment appeal. It's signaled to the global market that there is sophisticated money ready to back serious, complex industrial hardware.
But as you pointed out earlier, actually pulling this off is incredibly difficult. You are taking two totally different worlds, the world of high finance risk modeling and the gritty world of industrial machine maintenance, and forcing them to communicate.
Which begs the mechanical question, right? How do they practically connect an investor's capital to these highly technical operational assets without it turning into a chaotic, unmanageable mess?
It's the multi-million dollar question.
Literally. If I'm putting money into this, how do I know what my money is actually doing?
That structural challenge brings us directly to the specific financial mechanism that is being evaluated under this MOU. It is the engine that actually makes this connection possible.
Let's hear it.
The text mentions a very specific framework. Osul Gamma is assessing the integration of this entire CNC project under their CUNET product.
Yes, the CUNET model. The text explicitly defines CUNET as an investment framework designed around tangible assets and clearly defined operational projects. Let's break down the core focuses of this CUNET model, because the text outlines them with incredibly specific financial jargon.
It is quite dense, yes.
It lists transparent project structuring, feasibility-driven capital allocation, direct linkage between investor capital and productive assets, and giving access to diversified industrial investment opportunities.
To understand why this matters, we have to look at the alternative. This raises an important question about how capital is traditionally allocated in large-scale funds versus how it is allocated here.
Right, the traditional black box model. Let me see if I can visualize the contrast for you, the listener. If you invest in a standard real estate investment trust or a massive private equity fund, you hand over your capital and it just disappears into a giant pool of billions of dollars.
A completely opaque pool.
Right. The fund managers buy, sell, leverage, and trade abstract financial derivatives. You have zero line of sight into what your specific dollar is doing, and you just cross your fingers for a quarterly return.
That is the standard experience, yes.
But CUNET claims to have a direct linkage. When they say direct linkage, does that mean an investor using QNET literally has their capital tied to a specific CNC machine on a specific factory floor in Riyadh? And their returns are tied directly to the industrial parts that specific machine produces?
That is exactly what the framework implies. It is anchored in physical reality, stripping away the layers of abstraction that define modern Wall Street. You aren't buying a derivative of a derivative. You are financing a tangible, productive asset.
That is a massive paradigm shift. But I want to dig into one specific phrase from the text. It said, feasibility-driven capital allocation. What does that actual mechanism look like in practice?
It's a very deliberate approach to risk.
How is that different from, say, a venture capital firm just writing a huge check to a startup and hoping for the best?
Well, in traditional venture capital, a check is often written based on a projected valuation or maybe a promising software prototype. It is highly speculative.
Lots of guessing.
Right. But in heavy industry, speculation leads to catastrophic losses. Feasibility-driven capital allocation means the capital is strictly tied to the practical, proven requirements of a clearly defined operational project.
So the money isn't just handed over on day one.
Precisely. The capital allocation is likely tranched, released in stages based on operational milestones rather than just financial projections.
Oh, I see.
For example, capital is released to acquire the land. Once the land is secured, capital is released to build the facility. Once the facility is built, capital is released to purchase the first CNC line.
Step by step.
Exactly. The money is deployed based on the rigorous feasibility of that specific step being completed successfully. It ensures that every dollar of investor capital has a direct linkage to a productive asset that is meticulously managed.
I mean, if I am an investor, knowing exactly what my capital is doing, knowing it is backed by a physical, tangible asset that is actively producing value, and knowing the capital is only deployed when strict operational milestones are met, that completely changes my risk calculation.
It makes it real.
I'm not just betting on a CEO's charisma. I'm betting on the verifiable output of physical steel.
It offers an entirely different paradigm of security and engagement. And the text points out that as Saudi Arabia accelerates its industrial development, these types of asset-based financing models are becoming increasingly vital.
Because the old models don't fit the new reality.
Yeah. Exactly. When you are trying to rapidly scale advanced manufacturing across an entire nation, companies like Abba Jadida need modern, structured financing that aligns perfectly with the reality of heavy industry. Traditional commercial loans or standard equity structures simply do not offer the right balance of transparency and operational alignment for this scale of physical infrastructure.
They need a financial partner who speaks the language of tangible assets, not just the language of abstract leverage. They need a framework like QNET that can map the financial risk directly onto the physical reality of the machines.
And that is the true synthesis we are seeing at Cash Expo 2026. The MOU represents a highly pragmatic approach that integrates the foundational technology of advanced manufacturing, the CNC sector, with highly structured asset-based capital.
Two different worlds colliding.
It is two entirely different, highly specialized domains finding a common language to build something real.
Okay, we have covered an immense amount of ground here today. We started by looking at the raw, precision bottleneck of CNC machinery and why it acts as the central nervous system for an entire economy. We scaled up to the macro strategy of Saudi Arabia's industrial localization, exploring why building a domestic manufacturing API is a far more resilient strategy than relying purely on global outsourcing.
Right.
We watched a major financial player pivot away from static real estate to dynamically cash-flowing industrial machines. And finally, we broke down the transparent mechanics of the QNET framework, moving away from black box finance into direct, tangible linkage. So what does this all mean?
It means that this OU is far more than a routine corporate handshake designed to generate a quick press release. It is a highly specific operational blueprint.
A blueprint for the future.
Yes. For you listening, understanding these asset-backed models provides a remarkably clear lens into how the next phase of global industrial investment is being structured. We are witnessing a definitive shift.
Away from Wall Street abstractions.
Exactly. The market is slowly realizing the limitations of abstract, disconnected financial derivatives. We are moving toward a future defined by tangible, value-adding physical production. Capital is actively seeking a direct line back to reality.
Capital seeking a direct line back to reality. I love that phrasing. That brings us full circle to those invisible contracts we talked about at the very beginning.
It really does.
For decades, the financial architecture of the world has been getting more opaque, more complicated, and honestly more disconnected from the physical steel beams and precision machines it ultimately funds.
So disconnected.
But frameworks like MoU and structural models like QNIT, they are completely reversing that trend. They are making the connection between the investor and the physical producing asset totally visible.
They're turning our lights on.
Yeah. And that leaves us with a final highly provocative thought to mull over.
Right.
We've spent the last few decades watching money become entirely abstract.
Right.
But given this massive strategic push to tie investor capital directly to hard, productive, real economy assets, what happens to traditional opaque investment models if investors globally start demanding this exact level of direct, visible linkage?
It's a great question.
If you can suddenly log into a portal and see exactly how your specific capital is actively manufacturing the physical future, why would you ever go back to investing in the dark?